Welcome to this podcast episode from BusinessFinance.news. BusinessFinance.news brings readers timely business and financial news, market analysis, and context for understanding why important developments matter. So Apple just closed the books on the greatest June quarter in its entire history. We're talking fiscal Q3 2026.
Right, a massive quarter.
Yeah, $109.4 billion in revenue, which is up 16% year over year. And, you know, a 29% jump in earnings per share. So the big question is, why did the market immediately punish them, literally wiping out $360 billion in value overnight?
It's wild. A record-breaking quarter and then, boom, a historic sell-off. But, well, to understand why that happened, you really have to look past the headline revenue.
Exactly.
The numbers show that Apple, they absolutely do not have a consumer demand problem. What they have is a severe supply and cost problem.
Right.
And the central tension we need to figure out here is whether this is just a, you know, a temporary supply chain hiccup, or if this massive AI infrastructure boom has permanently repriced the cost of building consumer electronics, which would basically force Apple into this unwinnable bidding war against the cloud computing giants.
Yeah, it's a huge question. And to figure out why the market punished them so brutally, we have to look at the specific financial math that kind of broke the stock's narrative.
The underlying math, yeah.
Right, because, I mean, when I look at this, I see a market that's entirely missing the sheer strength of the underlying business. Products revenue is up 18.1%. Mac sales alone surged by, what, 28.7%?
Huge numbers.
And Greater China, which analysts have been wringing their hands over for 3 years, that grew 22.4%.
I mean, the top line demand is undeniable, but think about it like a highly successful restaurant with a line wrapped completely around the block.
Okay.
Having full tables is great, but the line outside doesn't matter if the cost of your ingredients suddenly doubled, right? You're making less and less money on every single meal you serve.
Right, the margins.
Exactly. We have to pivot to the margin trajectory because that is the actual crisis here.
Well, I get the restaurant analogy, but let's look at the actual profit margins they reported. They posted a 50.1% gross margin.
On paper.
Which is a remarkably strong hardware margin. I mean, especially compared to anyone else in the consumer electronics space.
It does look fantastic on paper, but you know, you really have to look under the hood of that 50.1%. That figure was actually artificially inflated by about 2 percentage points of tariff refunds.
Ah, right. Let's explain what that means for listeners who might not follow the deep accounting.
Sure. So essentially, Apple received a one-time refund from the government for import taxes they'd previously paid. It's a nice cash windfall, obviously, but it has literally nothing to do with how profitably they are manufacturing and selling iPhones right now.
Got it.
If you strip that one-time refund out, the underlying June quarter gross margin was closer to 48.1%.
Which, to be fair, is still an incredible margin for a company moving physical goods at that kind of scale.
It is. But markets trade on the future, right? Not the past. The real damage, the reason $360 billion just vanished, was in their September guidance.
The forward-looking numbers.
Exactly. Management guided for revenue growth to slow down to between 9 and 11%, missing Wall Street's 12% consensus. But more importantly, they guided gross margin to a range of 47 to 48%.
Ouch.
And if you take out the remaining 1 point of tariff refund benefit they expect in September, you are looking at an underlying margin near 46.5%.
So wait, you're looking at a drop from roughly 49.3% in the spring down to 46.5% in the fall.
Exactly. That is a 280 basis point drop across just two quarters. For a company whose entire $3 trillion valuation premise for the last decade has been built on structurally rising margins.
Yeah, that's a massive red flag.
Right. Investors pay a premium for Apple because they believe those margins will just keep creeping up. When they drop that sharply, the whole valuation model basically breaks.
Well, that's a fair breakdown of the math, but I'd frame the dynamic a bit differently, especially when we look at the services mix. Apple services segment, which is, you know, the App Store, Apple Music, iCloud, that grew at 12.1%.
Which was a slight miss against consensus.
A slight miss, yeah, against the $31.2 billion consensus.
but 12% growth on a base that's now running at roughly $120 billion annualized, that is a phenomenal absolute result.
Sure.
And the mix issue you're highlighting, it's really just a byproduct of incredible hardware demand. Lower margin physical products grew at 18.1%, completely outpacing the higher margin services. The blended margin went down simply because people are buying so many laptops and phones.
Right, but
I mean, are we really going to penalize a consumer electronics company for selling too many consumer electronics?
We absolutely are. If the profitability of those physical products is cratering because of input costs, you have to remember, every incremental dollar of services revenue is worth close to $2 of products revenue in gross profit terms.
True.
So when the mix moves the wrong way, you know, selling more lower margin hardware and proportionally less high margin software, and memory component costs are simultaneously spiking, the overall quality of Apple's revenue just deteriorates.
Yeah, the input costs.
Management openly admitted on the earnings call that more than 100% of the sequential gross margin decline was due to memory costs. The strong volume would have pushed margins higher, but those gains were entirely consumed by the skyrocketing costs of components.
Okay, so if the margins are dropping that fast entirely due to components, we really need to talk about exactly what is eating into those profits. Tim Cook actually called the current memory chip pricing a 100-year flood.
Right, driven by AI.
Exactly. He noted it's driven entirely by the AI capital expenditure cycle. But memory has always been a notoriously cyclical industry. You know, what goes up eventually comes down when new fabrication capacity comes online.
I hear that, but I just don't buy that this is a standard cycle. Let me explain why the mechanics are so different this time.
Okay, go ahead.
Look at the industry structure. You have three companies, Samsung, SK Hynix, and Micron, controlling roughly 95% of global DRAM output.
A massive oligopoly.
Right. And over the past 18 months, they have completely overhauled their production lines. They're redirecting their wafer capacity away from commodity DDR5 and LPDDR parts.
And just to clarify for the audience, those commodity parts are the standard everyday memory chips that power your laptop and your smartphone.
Exactly. The workhorse chips. They are taking capacity away from those and redirecting it toward high bandwidth memory, or HBM.
Which goes into the data centers.
Right. HBM is this highly specialized, intensely complex type of memory that sits right alongside AI accelerators inside these massive data centers. Analysts now estimate that AI data centers could absorb 70% of all high-end DRAM output in 2026.
Wow, 70%.
Yeah. This isn't just a temporary shortage because of a supply chain bottleneck. It is a structural shift in what the industry is actually choosing to manufacture. Micron literally retired its consumer-facing Crucial brand this year just to focus on data centers.
That's wild.
And SK Hynix's chief executive warned this demand imbalance will persist well beyond 2030. Because of this AI boom, Apple is now forced to pay data center-level prices for everyday consumer device components.
I mean, that is a compelling argument regarding the shift to HBM. But have you considered the capital-intensive nature of DRAM manufacturing? High prices inevitably fund new fabrication capacity.
Eventually, yes.
Right. It takes time to build these multi-billion dollar fabs, absolutely. But the capacity always arrives. And more importantly, look at how Apple is responding tactically to this environment. If you dig into the balance sheet, Apple's inventory spiked 94% in just 9 months, reaching $11.092 billion.
Which is staggering for a company that historically runs as lean as possible.
Exactly. Tim Cook's entire operational doctrine, dating back to when he revolutionized Apple's supply chain in the late 90s, is that inventory is, to quote him, fundamentally evil.
Right.
So a near doubling of inventory is a deliberate, massive strategic decision. It shows Apple is using its peerless balance sheet to prepay and hoard supply to protect the major fall product launches.
I guess.
It's a brilliant tactical move by a highly disciplined operations team. They saw the 100-year flood coming, and they built an $11 billion sandbag.
Well, hoarding components at top-of-the-market prices is a defensive tactic. It is not a long-term solution to a structural repricing of your core materials.
Fair enough.
And we are already seeing the friction it causes out in the real world. Apple has started aggressively passing these costs to consumers,
In June 2026, they raised Mac and iPad prices by $100 to $300 across the board.
Right, the recent price hikes.
Yeah, the MacBook Neo jumped from $599 to $699. The MacBook Air went to $1,299. They are pushing the absolute limit of consumer elasticity.
And by elasticity, you mean how sensitive buyers are to those price changes.
Precisely. There is a psychological barrier for a consumer buying a laptop. At $999, it's an easy purchase for a student or a remote worker.
Sure.
At $1,299, they start looking at alternatives, or they just delay the purchase for another year. When a massive cloud company builds a $10 billion data center, a 30% increase in memory costs is just a rounding error in a multi-year enterprise budget.
Yeah, they barely feel it.
Right, but when Apple builds a laptop for a retail consumer, a 30% increase either destroys the profit margin or prices the consumer entirely out of the market.
Okay, consumers might flinch at a $100 price hike, but you know who doesn't care about a 30% price hike? Amazon. And that brings up an incredible double standard in how the market is treating these companies right now.
Oh, the hyperscalers.
Yes, it is the perfect juxtaposition. On the exact same day, Apple lost $360 billion in market value for transparently managing its input costs, Amazon gained 15%. And a day earlier, Microsoft gained 16%, adding a record $450 billion in value.
Well, the hyperscalers are playing a very different game.
But look at the justification. Amazon literally cited the exact same memory component costs as the reason they are raising their 2026 capital expenditure plan by $20 billion, taking it to a staggering $220 billion.
Yeah, massive numbers.
Yet the market cheered Amazon for aggressively outspending everyone while brutally punishing Apple. It just defies rationality. Over the last 9 months, Apple generated $116.9 billion in operating cash flow while spending under $7 billion in CapEx.
Right.
They are incredibly capital efficient and they get punished for it.
The market reaction isn't a double standard, though. It's an accurate reflection of fundamentally different business models. The companies you mentioned, Amazon and Microsoft, are hyperscalers. They operate massive cloud infrastructure.
Right.
And they are generating accelerating, highly profitable revenue lines to justify that massive capital spend. Take Amazon's cloud computing division, AWS. It grew 37% in the quarter.
Which is huge.
It translates to $169 billion annualized run rate. AWS segment operating margins hit 39.4%. Plus, Amazon finally revealed that their internal custom silicon business, you know, chips like Graviton, Trainium, and Nitro, is exceeding a $25 billion run rate.
The scale is massive, no question about that.
But here is the critical difference regarding how they absorb memory costs. These hyperscalers have pre-sold their output. Amazon reported a $496 billion cloud backlog.
Wow.
Yeah. Their enterprise customers sign multi-year contracts because they are desperate for compute power to run their own AI models. When your output is contractually spoken for $500 billion into the future, your willingness to pay whatever Samsung asks for memory is practically limitless.
I see your point.
Apple doesn't have a $496 billion backlog of pre-sold laptops. As we discussed, they have a hard ceiling on what a regular person will actually hand over at the Apple store.
Okay, I hear that. But I think we need to inject some intellectual caution into that hyperscaler narrative, particularly regarding Amazon's seemingly unstoppable profit engine.
Oh!
Yeah, yes. Their headline numbers looked spectacular, and AWS is a beast. But did you catch the $53.4 billion asterisk on their earnings?
Ah, you're talking about the Anthropic valuation?
Exactly. Amazon reported a massive jump in net income, which the market cheered. But their release plainly states that $53.4 billion of that was non-operating, pre-tax other income. It was a paper mark-to-market gain on their investment in the AI startup Anthropic, driven entirely by a recent funding round.
Well, let's clarify mark-to-market accounting for a second for the listeners. That basically means they adjusted the value of their asset on the balance sheet to reflect its current market price and claimed that increases income.
Precisely. Imagine your house appreciates in value by $100,000, and you claim that increase as your income for the year, even though you didn't sell the house.
Right, it's just on paper.
You haven't realized a single dollar of actual cash. Roughly two-thirds of an Amazon's reported pre-tax profit was just a valuation mark on a private company. That suggests the AI cloud trade carries massive untested valuation risks.
That's a fair point.
Because if Anthropic's next funding round prices flat or goes down, that exact same accounting mechanism runs in reverse and blows a hole through Amazon's income statement. It's circular financing. It is paper wealth versus Apple's cold, hard cash generation.
Okay, the mark-to-market accounting is a very fair point, and it certainly highlights the circular financing risks in the broader AI ecosystem right now.
Right.
These companies are investing in startups that then turn around and buy cloud services from them, but you still can't dismiss the 37% growth in AWS or the 43% growth in Microsoft's Azure. Those are real cash-generating engines that can absorb the cost of memory.
True.
The fundamental issue for Apple is how they navigate this new reality where hardware costs are structurally higher, especially with a historic leadership change looming.
The CEO transition?
Right. John Ternus officially takes over as CEO on September 1st, and he is inheriting Tim Cook's worst component squeeze in 15 years. Cook is widely regarded as an operations master, and he is handing a severely supply-constrained company over to a hardware engineering executive.
Well, Ternus has been deeply involved in Apple's product and silicon transitions for years, though. He led the transition from Intel to Apple Silicon. I don't think his engineering background is a vulnerability in this specific crisis.
You don't think so?
No. In fact, it might be exactly the product-focused leadership needed to design around these constraints. If memory is expensive, you optimize the hardware and software architecture to require less of it.
But look at the product decisions being made right now under this constraint. The rumor mill strongly indicates Apple is completely splitting the iPhone 18 launch.
Oh, the staggered release.
Yeah. The high-end Pro models and their first foldable handset are slated to launch in the fall, but the standard, lower-priced iPhone 18 is reportedly being delayed until spring 2027.
Right.
That doesn't look like product innovation to me. It looks exactly like desperate supply chain rationing. They are trying to concentrate their scarce, highly expensive memory components exclusively into their highest-priced units to protect the margins.
I see what you're saying, but...
The true test isn't going to be this fall with the early adopters. It's going to be March 2027. Can regular consumers actually stomach these higher price points for the standard models once the initial launch enthusiasm fades?
Well, I view that delay completely differently. You see desperation, I see a flex of sheer market power.
Really?
Yeah. Think about the broader industry context. If memory costs are currently squeezing Apple, a company with roughly 40% gross margins on its hardware, just imagine what this is doing to the rest of the industry. This environment will absolutely devastate mid-tier Android and PC competitors.
Because they don't have the margin buffer.
Exactly. If you're a mid-tier Android maker running on a 6 or 7% operating margin, a 30% jump in memory costs wipes out your entire profit. You're completely underwater.
That's true.
They cannot absorb these component increases, and they don't have the brand loyalty to raise their phone prices by $200 without destroying their sales volume. A prolonged memory squeeze might actually serve as a competitive moat for Apple.
Yeah.
It allows them to leverage their massive balance sheet to weather the storm, consolidate global market share from weaker rivals, and solidify their ecosystem even further.
Well, gaining market share while earning less on every single unit you sell isn't exactly a victory march for a company valued at over $3 trillion.
It's survival of the fittest.
But the valuation relies on those margins expanding, not contracting. Apple's decision to bring their application processors and modems in-house over the last decade was a brilliant way to control their destiny. But they left memory as a purchase commodity.
Right.
And in 2026, memory is the only input that truly matters. Samsung, who happens to be one of Apple's biggest smartphone competitors, is one of the three companies controlling that memory. Samsung is vertically integrated. They are benefiting from the price increase on their semiconductor fabrication side while managing the impact on their device side. Apple is entirely exposed to the open market.
Yeah, that exposure is a real factor. So when you pull back and look at this entire situation, I think the underlying fundamentals tell a much more resilient story than a one-day $360 billion stock drop implies.
Okay.
From my perspective, Apple's underlying consumer demand remains incredibly robust. You simply don't see double-digit growth across every geography and major product line if the core business is broken.
Fair.
Their cash generation is peerless. Nearly $117 billion in operating cash flow in just 9 months. And they have the ultimate fortress balance sheet to survive the cyclical input shock better than anyone else in consumer hardware. The fact that they spiked their inventory by 94% proves they're actively and successfully managing the shortage. They are playing the long game.
And pulling back from my perspective, the core issue is that the AI infrastructure boom has fundamentally altered the tech hardware supply chain. We are no longer in a normal cyclical environment where you just wait for supply to catch up.
Right.
Until massive new memory fab capacity arrives, which takes years to build, Apple is trapped in a structural bidding war against hyperscalers, whose output is pre-sold and who have almost zero price sensitivity.
Yeah.
This dynamic fundamentally threatens Apple's historic margin expansion story, which is the entire foundation of their premium valuation. They are competing for ingredients against buyers with bottomless wallets.
Well, it seems we both acknowledge that the ultimate variable here is time.
Definitely.
The question is whether SK Hynix is right that the structural imbalance lasts until 2030, which would require a total repricing of consumer electronics across the board. Or does the capital cycle work as it always has, with high prices funding new fabs and new capacity normalizing prices by 2027?
Exactly. And what this earnings week really proved beyond just Apple-specific numbers is that artificial intelligence is no longer just a hot trend you can choose to invest in or ignore.
No, absolutely not.
It has become a macroeconomic input cost affecting the entire global supply chain. You cannot own large-cap technology today without having a clear thesis on AI capital expenditures, because even if a company like Apple doesn't sell enterprise AI, they still have to compete with AI for their raw materials.
It really brings us back to that restaurant analogy. The line of hungry customers is still wrapped around the block. Apple absolutely has the demand, but the cost of keeping the kitchen running has fundamentally changed, and the market is waiting to see who is ultimately going to foot the bill.
Well said.
We suggest listeners keep exploring the data, look closely at the upcoming memory contract pricing, and follow this developing story on businessfinance.news. The market is shifting rapidly, and the definitive answer to how this resolves is still being written.